Good morning and welcome to Occupy the Airwaves. All right, today I'm going to talk about free speech again. I'm going to give an example of primo free speech use. But first I want to talk about the continuing onslaught against free speech in America and the West. And it's actually pretty scary because I see people, this attack on free speech from the government and the corporations together. Do you know what that combination of government and corporations joining up to stomp all over humans? Yeah, that's called fascism, according to Mussolini. But anyhow, this whole thing has been going on for a while, but the scary part is they get clueless Americans to go along with them. And I'm shocked by this because pretty much the only thing that Americans have in common, as I've said before, Americans are people from all over the world, all different places, all different religions, all different views. But the only thing we ever had in common, really, was the belief that freedom was good and the Bill of Rights was important and free speech was all important. And now they got a bunch of clueless. And the thing is, these people who call themselves liberals are the worst. And this whole free speech idea, the whole freedom of the person, came from liberals. Back in the Alliance, they were rebelling against the dark ages of the Catholic Church having a total complete control over the bodies and minds of the people in Europe. The Catholic Church was extremely brutal in enforcing. It was an economic and a political effort. What they did was they spread all over Europe. They took all the free pagan tribes of Europe and they forcibly converted them to Catholicism, and they made them be peasants on feudal lands. So formerly free pagan tribes became Catholic and they became peasants and they had no rights and they were not allowed to think any differently. No, you had to believe in the Catholic Church or you could get burned at the stake as a heretic. And that is exactly what we're going into again. And it was the liberals in the Enlightenment who fought against that. And it's the self-identified liberals of today who are eagerly embracing it in the name of, oh, just be nice. So you'll have people tell you there are laws against hate speech in America. No, they're not. There are no laws against hate speech. You can be as hateful as you want. You can say whatever you want. Or you can't say mean things. Yes, you can. You can say mean things. So it isn't illegal. Obviously, it's rude, but it is not illegal. And, you know, there's no law against being rude yet either. You can't lie. That's the new one. You can't lie. Are you kidding me? Of course you can lie. Look at your government. Look at the media. There's like 1,200 media outlets owned by corporations, and every one of them puts out lies. Usually the same lies that are handed to them from the government or the corporations. So yeah, they lie. What they're trying to do is they're trying to make it so you cannot tell the truth. Because what they're doing is they're saying, just like the Pope was infallible, now they're saying that the government is infallible and that you may not argue with whatever the government says, because then that makes you a heretic and you are not allowed to disagree with them or to contradict them or to put up actual facts that show they're lying. And what gets me is when people go along with this. This is outrageous. This is, then you have nothing. And the thing is, it's the same thing. What they're doing is they're putting in corporate feudalism. They're putting in this new thing, what the TPP was supposed to be, or what NAFTA was, or what WTO was, whereas you, as a citizen, have no rights. The only reason for your government to exist is to enforce corporate law and corporate rules and giveaways to corporations. For instance, when NAFTA was passed, a gold mining company from Canada wanted to go down and rip apart mountains in, I think it was El Salvador. This gold mining company from Canada wanted to go to El Salvador and rip up mountains looking for gold. And the people that lived on the mountains and the people that lived below the mountains that depended on the water from the mountains objected. So the government and said, no, we're going to protect the water. We're going to protect the land. We're going to protect our citizens. And the gold company sued and they took it to this private court because it's not a public court. It's not judges that have any accountability to you, the people. They only have accountability to their corporate owners who appoint them. And it ruled against the government of El Salvador, and they had to pay hundreds of millions of dollars to this gold mining company in lost profits because they had the nerve to protect their own soil, their own water, and their own people. And that's what governments are going to be for in this corporate feudalism we're going to. And the reason they have to have the infallibility of the government and the corporations is because if anyone is allowed to speak out against it, there might be more more resistance, like there was in El Salvador. So what they're doing is they're taking us back to the Dark Ages, where we have to bow down to the corporate church, and we have to accept their word as infallible. And if anyone steps out of line, they're a heretic and they're burned at the stake. And that's what we're going back to. And what we're seeing right now is they're putting the mechanism into place. And what gets me is people that go along with it. It's just unbelievable. By the way, you can lie, but if you hurt someone with your lie, they can sue you in a civil court for slander or libel. They can't have you thrown into prison. It's not a criminal offense to say mean things about people. You can get sued in a civil court, but you cannot get thrown into prison now. But this is what they are changing. And everybody should be complaining about it. Richard and I talked about this, and we read something from Consortium News from John Stuart Mill, who was a standard classic liberal of the 17th century, I think 18th maybe. And I went back to Consortium News to find that quote, and I found three more. So I'm going to read them. The first one is John Milton, and the quote is, "Let her in falsehood grapple, whoever know truth, to be put to the worse in a free and open encounter," unquote. Yeah, if you think that someone's telling a lie, well, then tell the truth. And then if it was actually free and open, truth would always win. Unfortunately, nowadays, you've got the mighty Wolitzer, like I said, six corporations controlling all the news outlets anyone sees, and then people go, "Well, I've heard it on six places. Are you telling me they're all lying?" Yes, I am. I'm telling you they're all lying because they're all owned by the same corporations and they're all getting it from the same place. But anyhow, so this is John Stuart Mill himself opposing suppression of any view. Quote, "If the opinion is right, the public are deprived of the opportunity to exchange error for truth. If wrong, they lose what is almost as great a benefit, the clearer perception and livelier impression of truth produced by its collision with error," unquote. That's the one we read on Monday, and that's the one I was looking for. Yes, you are just as good hearing someone lie as long as someone is allowed to tell the truth, and they get equal time, as if you only heard the truth, which, by the way, you aren't hearing from your owners. And this is Justice Oliver Wendell Holmes, and he is the one that is always quoted by clueless idiots. They'll say, "Well, you can't shout fire in a crowded theater." Well, that was Oliver Wendell Holmes back in 1920 or so. He was upholding the imprisonment of a man put into prison because he was passing out leaflets against World War I, which obviously is an expression of free speech. But back then, I've talked about World War I, I think on last week's show, those were pretty bad days, and they were not just suppressing truth. They didn't just put out propaganda through the Committee on the Public Danger. They actually put people in prison, like Eugene Debs, for talking against the war, and then this man, I can't remember his name, but he sued to get out, and Oliver Wendell Holmes said, "Well, you can't cry fire in a crowded theater." That's one that really triggers me, because I think I've mentioned this before. My grandfather was killed when some teenagers threw a smoke bomb into the crowded dance hall where he was, and he had a heart attack and died, and nothing happened to those kids. So don't even quote Oliver Wendell Holmes to me, of all people. You can't yell fire in a crowded theater, because I know that they got away with it. And the reason that the guy said it in the first place is because he was putting someone in jail for opposing war. So don't even go there with me. I'm just never in the mood for that bull. But anyhow, so he repented later, and they did overthrow that whole thing where you're not allowed to oppose war in the 60s. But here, this is Justice Oliver Wendell Holmes. "The ultimate good desired is better reached by free trade in ideas, that the best test of truth is the power of the thought to get itself accepted in the competition of the market," unquote. And then the last one is Justice Louis Brandeis, quote, "If there be time to expose through discussion the falsehoods and fallacies, to avert the evil by the processes of education, the remedy to be applied is more speech, not enforced speech," unquote. So there you go. The answer to bad speech is more speech. The answer to lies is truth. So now I'm going to, speaking of truth and lies, I was listening to a podcast where someone mentioned that Putin had refuted the lies that the mighty Wolitzer propaganda, the six corporations with their 1,200 news outlets, put that in air quotes, are putting out about, oh, everyone's going to starve and it's all Russia's fault. Well, that's a lie. So I tried to find the actual interview, and I tried with the usual search engines, DuckDuckGo, even Ecosia. I couldn't find it. Had to go to Yandex. Then I found it. It's on the Saker. Because the search engines, of course, are also manipulated. The government told the corporations that own the search engines like Google, this is starting in 2017, that they had to manipulate the searches to make sure that approved propaganda was in the first 12 pages. And if they give you the truth, the one you want at all, it's going to be on page 100. And you've already given up. Because I tried to go Putin's interview, June, you know, I just gave everything I could to think of how I could get it. And I got, is Putin crazy or just evil? Is Putin sick? Did I put sick in there? Did I put crazy in there? Did I put evil in there? No, I said I wanted his friggin' interview. And I did. And then I got an interview from 4 years ago when Megyn Kelly or whatever her name is went there and told him, you cannot do whataboutism. So a blonde bimbo is going to tell a president of a sovereign country what he's allowed to say and what he isn't. See, that's the difference. She is one of those, well, you can only say what the U.S. corporate ruling overlords allow you to say. And how dare he say something different? So anyhow, so this is, he's being interviewed by someone called Pavel Zerubin about the lies that the U.S. mighty Wolitzer is putting out now. Mr. President, we've just followed your meeting with the head of Senegal, who is also the current leader of the African Union. He expressed, and actually in the past week, many countries have expressed concern, not so much about the food crisis, but they are afraid of large-scale famine because world food prices are climbing and so are the oil and gas prices. These issues are interrelated. Naturally, the West blames Russia for this too. What is the real situation at this point? How is it developing? And what do you think will happen in the food and energy markets? All right, so then Putin says, and imagine if someone asked Biden that question and see if Biden could come up with anything that wasn't word salad. Yes, indeed, we are seeing attempts to place the responsibility on Russia for developments in the global food market and the growing problems there. I must say that this is another attempt to pin the blame on someone else. But why? First, the situation with the global food market did not become worse yesterday, or even with the launch of Russia's special military operation in Donbass in Ukraine. The situation took a downturn in February 2020 during the efforts to counter the coronavirus pandemic when the global economy was down and had to be revived. And I think if people are honest with themselves, they will know that this did start a while back. Empty shelves, high gas prices. This didn't start 3 months ago. This started before. The financial and economic authorities in the United States, of all things, found nothing better than to allocate large amounts of money to support the population and certain businesses and economic sectors. We generally did almost the same thing, but I assure you that we were much more accurate and the results are obvious. We did this selectively and got the desired results without affecting macroeconomic indicators, including excessive inflation growth. Yeah, because they gave people, when they told them to stay home to stop the spread of the virus, they gave them a stipend so they could still pay the rent and buy food and stuff. In America, all we got is one $1,200 check to go for a year. Good luck with that. Not even a month's worth of food and bills to pay. All right, back to Putin. The situation was quite different in the United States. The money supply in the United States grew by $5.9 trillion in less than 2 years, from February 2020 to the end of 2021. Unprecedented productivity of the money printing machines. That's being kind of snarky, kind of funny though. The total cash supply grew by 38.6%. Apparently, the U.S. financial authorities believed the dollar was a global currency and it would spread as usual, as it did in previous years, would dissolve in the global economy, and the United States would not even feel it. But that did not happen, not this time. As a matter of fact, decent people, and there are such people in the United States, the Secretary of the Treasury recently said they had made a mistake. So it was a mistake made by the U.S. financial and economic authorities. It has nothing to do with Russia's actions in Ukraine. It is totally unrelated. Okay, so that was what he's saying about inflation. You put, how much did he say? He's good at actual facts, unlike the mighty Wolitzer propaganda we get. Almost $6 trillion they pumped out in 2 years. And then they wonder why there's inflation. It's not really inflation of food and stuff. It's devaluation of the dollar because there's too many dollars put into the economy. And I don't mean literally. Obviously, it's done by computer nowadays and debit cards and all that. But it was still done. And then Putin says, and that was the first step, and a big one, toward the current unfavorable food market situation, because in the first place, food prices immediately went up. They grew. This is the first reason. The second reason was European countries' short-sighted policies, and above all, the European Commission's policy in regard to energy. We see what is going on there. Personally, I believe that many political players in the United States and Europe have been taking advantage of people's natural concerns about the climate change, and they began to promote this green agenda, including in the energy sector. It all seems fine. Well, I agree, because you know, you can't keep using up that much energy, but whatever. Except for the unqualified and groundless recommendations about what needs to be done in the energy sector. The capabilities of alternative types of energy are overestimated. Solar, wind, any other types, hydrogen, these are good prospects for the future, probably, but today they cannot be produced in the required amount with the required quality and acceptable prices. And at the same time, they begin to belittle the importance of conventional types of energy, including and above all, hydrocarbons. And again, no one ever talks about, not Putin, not the United States, not Europe. They don't talk about, well, maybe we should reduce demand if we can't increase supply. Duh. Okay, back to Putin. What was the result of this? Banks stopped issuing loans because they were under pressure. Insurance companies stopped insuring deals. Local authorities stopped allocating plots of land for expanding production and reduced the construction of special transport, including pipelines. All of this led to a shortage of investment in the world energy sector and price hikes as a result. The wind was not as strong as expected during the past year. Winter dragged on and prices instantly soared. On top of all that, the Europeans did not listen to our persistent request to preserve long-term contracts for the delivery of natural gas to European countries. They started to wind them down. Many are still valid, but they started winding them down. This had a negative effect on the European energy market. The prices went up. Russia had absolutely nothing to do with this. But as soon as gas prices started going up, fertilizer prices started suit because gas is used to produce some of these fertilizers. Everything is interconnected. As soon as fertilizer prices started growing, many businesses, including those in European countries, became unprofitable and started shutting down altogether. The amount of fertilizer in the world market took a dive and prices soared dramatically, much to the surprise of many European politicians. However, we warned them about this, and this is not linked to Russia's military operation in Donbass in any way. This has nothing to do with it. But when we launched our operation, our so-called European and American partners started taking steps that aggravated the situation in both the food sector and fertilizer production. By the way, Russia accounts for 25% of the world fertilizer market. As for potash fertilizers, Alexander Lukashenko told me this, but we should double check it, of course, although I think it is true. When it comes to potash fertilizers, Russia and Belarus account for 45% of the world market. This is a tremendous amount. The crop yield depends on the quality of the fertilizer put into the soil. As soon as it became clear that our fertilizers would not be in the world market, prices instantly soared on both fertilizers and food products because if there are no fertilizers, impossible to produce the required amount of agricultural products. One thing leads to another, and Russia has nothing to do with it. Our partners made a host of mistakes themselves, and now they're looking for someone else to blame. Of course, Russia is the most suitable candidate in this respect. Pavel Zarapin. Incidentally, it's just been reported that the wife of the head of our largest fertilizers companies has been included in the new European package of sanctions. What will this lead to, in your opinion? Then Vladimir Putin says, this will make a bad situation worse. The British and later the Americans imposed sanctions on our fertilizers. Then, having realized what was happening, the Americans lifted their sanctions, but the Europeans did not. They are telling me themselves during contacts, yes, we must think about it. We must do something about it. But today they have just aggravated the situation. This will make the situation in the world fertilizer worse, and hence the crop prospects will be much more modest and prices will keep going up. That is it. This is absolutely myopic, erroneous, I would say, simply stupid policy that leads to a deadlock. So what he's saying, and I'll just have to condense this a little bit here. What he's saying is the Americans and the Europeans put sanctions onto Russia and Belarus including the fertilizer. And then when it becomes clear that food production is going to drop because of the sanctions that America and Europe applied, they blame Russia, who is the victim here. As a matter of fact, they said when they put on the sanctions, they were rubbing their hands with glee. Oh boy, the Russians are really going to suffer here. Oh, it's going to be great. They're going to starve. They're going to not have enough stuff. And they're going to be mad. And they're going to overthrow Putin. And oh boy, it's going to be great. We're really going to make them suffer. They were rubbing their hands with glee about the suffering, the proposed suffering of the Russian people. But when it turned out that it's actually them that are going to suffer, they went, oh, wait, we don't want this. But let's talk about Africa. Let's not say that we're upset that we're going to be going without food. Let's talk about other countries and say that Russia is deliberately starving the people of Africa. Although the president of the African Union didn't believe that. He did not tell Putin that, yeah, we blame you. He knows where the blame is. This propaganda is aimed at the entire world, but Africans aren't falling for it. The only ones falling for it are Americans or Europeans. That's how it goes. And then Pavel Zarubin says, but Russia is accused by high-ranking officials of preventing the grain that is actually there in Ukrainian ports from leaving. Another lie, and Vladimir Putin very calmly explains it with facts and figures. How unusual. We don't see that in the West. So Vladimir Putin says they are bluffing, and will explain why. First, there are some objective things, and I will mention them now. The world produces about 800 million tons of grain, wheat, per year. Now we are being told that Ukraine is ready to export 20 million tons. So 20 million tons out of 800 million tons amounts to 2.5%. Hey, he can even do math. How about that? But if we proceed from the fact that wheat accounts for merely 20% of all food products in the world, and this is the case, this is not our data, it comes from the UN, this means that these 20 million tons of Ukrainian wheat are just 0.5%, practically nothing. This is the first point. So how can the world starve if they don't get that 0.5%? Yeah, only with propaganda. Okay, back to Vladimir Putin giving more facts to counter the lies put out by the mighty Wolitzer. The second 20 million tons of Ukrainian wheat are potential exports. Today, the U.S. official bodies also say that Ukraine could export 6 million tons of wheat. According to our Ministry of Agriculture, the figure is not 6, but about 5 million tons. But okay, let us assume it is 6. Plus, it could export 7 million tons of maize. This is the figure of our Ministry of Agriculture. We realize that this is not much. In the current agricultural year of 2021-2022, we will export 37 million, and I believe we will raise these exports to 50 million tons in 2022-2023. But this is apropos, by the way. As for shipping out Ukrainian grain, we are not preventing this. There are several ways to export grain. Now, remember that what the lying propagandists on the mighty Wolitzer are telling you is that Russia is blocking the ports. That's what they're telling people. Okay, so he's going to say there are several ways to export grain. The first one, you could ship it out via the Ukraine-controlled ports, primarily in the Black Sea, Odessa, and nearby ports. We did not mind the approaches to the port. Ukraine did this. Now remember, Russia doesn't control Odessa. Ukraine does. So Ukraine shuts down Odessa, mines the ports, and then the mighty Wolitzer tells you that Russia did it. That's a lie. All right, back to Putin. I've already said to all our colleagues many times, let them demine the ports and let the vessels loaded with grain leave. We will guarantee their peaceful passage to international waters without any problems. There are no problems at all. Go ahead. They must clear the mines and raise the ships they sunk on purpose in the Black Sea to make it difficult to enter the ports to the south of Ukraine. We are ready to do this. We will not use the demining process to initiate attack from the sea. I've already said this. This is the first point. The second, there is another opportunity. The ports in the Sea of Azov, Berdansk and Mariupol are under our control, and we are ready to ensure a problem-free exit from these ports, including for exported Ukrainian grain. Go ahead, please. We are already working on the demining process. We are completing this work one at a time. Ukrainian troops laid three layers of mines. This process is coming to the end. We will create the necessary logistics. This is not a problem. We will do this. This is the second point. Okay, do you see what he's saying? He's saying that Odessa, under the control of Ukraine, is shut down and they're blaming Russia. But Berdansk and Mariupol, under control of Russia, are open. And Putin says, you can ship the grain out through those two ports if you want to. If you're really worried about the world starving, you can ship them out through those two ports. Yeah, you don't see the propaganda people talking about that, do you? No, you do not. And then he said, the third, it is possible to move grain from Ukraine via the Danube and through Romania. Fourth, it is also possible through Hungary. And fifth, it is also possible to do this via Poland. Yes, there are some technical problems because the trucks are of different gauges and the wheel bogies must be changed. But this only takes a few hours, that is all. Finally, the easiest way is to transport grain via Belarus. This is the easiest and the cheapest way because from there it can be instantly shipped to the Baltic ports and further on to any place in the world. But they would have to lift the sanctions from Belarus. This is not our problem, though. At any rate, President of Belarus, Alexander Lukashenko, puts it like this. If someone wants to resolve the problem of exporting Ukrainian grain, if this problem exists at all, please use the simplest way, through Belarus. No one will stop you. So the problem of shipping grain out of Ukraine does not really exist. So Pavel Zurbarán said, how would the logistics work to ship it from the ports under our control? What would the conditions be? And Vladimir Putin says, no conditions. They are welcome. We will provide peaceful passage, guarantee safe approaches to these ports, and ensure the safe entry of foreign ships and passage through the Sea of Azov and the Black Sea in any directions. By the way, several ships are stuck in Ukrainian ports at this point. There are foreign ships, dozens of them. They are simply locked up and their crews are still being held hostage. And actually, when the Russians liberated Mariupol in April of this year, they released a whole, 12 ships that had been held hostage by the Ukrainian government when the Ukrainian government controlled the port of Mariupol. They were holding people hostage from countries all over the world. And these people were stuck on these ships, and the Ukrainians wouldn't let them leave. So after the Russians liberated the port of Mariupol and demined the entrance to the port, they let them go. And those people are gone. And they say anyone can come and go from the ports they control. But the lying people that control our media are busily telling you the whole world's going to starve because 20 million tons of grain from Ukraine cannot get out of Ukraine. That is two lies right there. 20 million tons are not going to stop the world from starving, number one, as Putin's pointed out. And number two, there's no problem. They could ship it out. They're holding it there so that people will starve, so that they can point the finger at Russia. And do they care if people starve? Let me see. Remember, back in the 90s when Leslie Stahl asked Madeleine Albright about the children of Iraq. Because, again, when the United States puts sanctions on a country, they say, we are doing this to starve the people and to submission. They said it about Iraq. They say it about Iran. They say it about Venezuela. They say it about Russia. They say it about Syria. They gleefully say every time, we're going to starve them until they do what we say. So anyhow, in the 90s, Leslie Stahl says to Madeleine Albright, Clinton's Secretary of State, I believe she was, we have heard that 500,000 children have died because of the sanctions. That's a lot of children. Do you think it's worth it? And Madeleine Albright said, yes, yes, we think it is worth it. So don't think that your overlords care about anyone starving anywhere in the world, and that includes here. They don't. They're only using it as a weapon. And here's another thing. I just want to add this at the end. Ukraine has, of course, it has American public relations firms there. And also the head of disinformation, the disinformation expert, Nina Jankowicz, who was fired actually on this country. She had worked in Ukraine teaching them how to lie for a year. But they had a woman, and her name is Ludmila Denisova, and she was the Ukraine's human rights ombudsman. And she was putting out lie after lie. She specialized in rape stories. That is what she liked to do. She liked to tell lurid, horror. I mean, Richard and I talk about this on Monday. She got fired by the Rada of Ukraine. So she was so bad that even they fired her. That was last week. So everyone knows she lied. Even the Ukrainian Rada said she lied. They fired her because she lied. 2 days ago, or whatever it was, one of the functionaries of the European Union went to the United Nations and said, this is what Russian troops are doing. And he spread all the lies that were so blatant, so false, so ridiculously ludicrous that the Ukrainian Rada fired Lyudmila. And he said it as if that had never happened, as if it had never been debunked, as if it was still true. That's what they do. They lie. And then the truth comes out, and then they admit, oh yeah, okay, we lied. And then they pretend like it never happened. It's the same as the bounties on American soldiers or Russiagate or whatever. They lie. Millions of people believe them. Eventually they go, yeah, we lied. And then they turn around and pretend like they never admitted it, and they start doing the lies again. And that is how they do. And this is what Jacob Drizin said on the DrizinReport.com. He said, keep in mind, to get fired in a hurry with no replacement lined up for, and I'm going to paraphrase, lying in a government of liars under a professional comedian president with the whole Western world eager to eat up helping servings of your lies, you must be a real loser. But even worse than Lyudmila is the European guy repeating the lies after it has been so thoroughly debunked. All right, well, that's how they do. I hope people will stand up for freedom of speech, unless you don't mind living in a corporate feudalism under total control of your masters and not allowed to believe anything but what the infallible corporate media tells you. Maybe you'd rather do that. I don't know. I don't understand that personally, but whatever. All right, well, it's the end of Occupy the Airwaves. See you next week.